The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Great asset in terms of learning about other people that are in your program, that probably because you're divided in sections, no? What section are you?
I'm in section 2.
How many students are
in? 90,
I think. 90. ¿Y cuántas secciones hay?
4 dates.
Okay, so you're going to get the opportunity to meet also the part-time students and also alums that are 2Ls, 3Ls, or 4Ls that are going to be talking. There are going to be table talks, and then there's going to be a lunch with alumni from previous years and so on.
Is that something that I need to bring a resume to?
No.
Okay, good, because I need to work on that.
No, in fact, what the office has done is pair up with Legal Rhetoric. And one of your mandatory classes, just so you know, is going to be, the legal resume and cover letter. So somebody from Career Services is going to go there, and they're going to sit next to each other. I don't know which Amy Diller or somebody from Legal Rhetoric is going to be giving the speech on the part of Legal Rhetoric, but. Yeah, and then you can, after November 1st, you can make any, appointments with all our counselors there. Well, not with all of them, but I strongly recommend that you pick one at the beginning. So.
Yeah, I think we should begin.
Okay, go ahead.
I was thinking maybe you should be first, because tienes la definición y todo.
¿Puedo parar? No, porque yo no puedo hablar.
Just speak Spanish, right?
Yeah.
Going to study. Okay. Yeah. That's my husband.
You have to give him a present. You have one person.
Besito.
My former, the former director of our office.
Yeah.
already grabbed it.
Really? For what panel?
Because
it's
last week.
Education.
And my cousin went
also.
For me, in Canada, it's...
She is like right on top.
That's what I'm going to
mingle it
for a
¿Qué tal te va en el banco?
Bien.
¿Te gusta lo que hace Muga? Claro, yo estoy en el departamento legal.
Voy y regreso a mamá.
Sí, sí me contó John. John se sienta atrás mío. Tu compañero.
Sí, me.
Sí.
Sí,
yo sé, a mí también me pareció raro cuando si está hablando con él y así mismo Ali va a un JD de América. Entonces yo le pregunté, ¿tú conoces a David? Y me dice, claro. Porque en cambio existe relación. No, sí, está bien, me encanta. Sí, en el departamento legal. De todo modo, conversar en yo soy el Chicos, nos vemos esta noche. Bye, Jason.
¿Vas a venir esta noche a ver la novela?
No puedo,
disculpen.
Ok,
no te preocupes.
Vamos a tratar. Sí. Vamos a hacer como un trabajo en grupo.
¿Ya te vas? Bueno, ya porque yo más conozco a veces ya. Sí, lamentablemente eso que te dije de career day for one else, I'm not going to even my last day is October 31st in the fall. Huh? Is it right before? Is that still November 1st? No, November 1st is the deadline for us not to see you guys because you haven't sold and understand it. But the career day for one else is like, I think it's Saturday and I think it's November 5th. So yeah. But before we introduce ourselves, just so that that Viviana and I can sort of figure out how to take our presentation to you. Why were you interested in coming to this session?
I guess it seems like I asked myself the question that what having LLMs here from other parts of the country, of the world,
and the country, yes,
and the other countries. Well, I guess I was thinking more like international LLMs. Mm-hmm. What is the tie between LLMs and the JD students, and what can I learn from each other in terms of like international? And I'm very interested in, I don't know what law I'm going to do, but something that has something to do with international, just because in nature of like where my family's from, I was born and raised in Miami, but my mom's Cuban, my dad's Cuban, my mom's Brazilian, and still travel to Brazil too often, and just speaking, I guess, like Spanish and Portuguese, something that I'm very interested in. So it seems like there's a logical connection there with the LLMs, and I wasn't sure, like, get on the website or on the email listserv, and I found this and I was like, oh, that would be a good idea just to see what other people have ideas on this.
But you haven't tried it? Have you met anybody?
Except for Viviana, of course, because now she's definitely a link with you and the editors, but besides meeting Viviana today, have you met any other?
Sort of, I met Charlemagne, who's from the U.S., but Carlos, I think he gave me his business card.
He's from Venezuela. He's a Brazilian male anymore.
And he told me to sign up for the listserv, but I haven't done it yet. I've been meaning to.
Yeah, you should. We do a lot of fun stuff.
But the thing is that, you know what is the problem also why you don't do me first L, one L, but you do it because the one L has mandatory class. So you don't even see them in the classroom. But then when you are 2L and 3L, we are in the same class. Like one class taking immigration law, and we are like 8 or 10 LLMs, and then the other ones are JD, and you cannot commingle.
But actually, you know what? It's actually not that accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you guys in the ISSB program haven't figured out is that the other epigram program that we have in the law school, the law and government,
mm-hmm.
not all of the classes that you're taking are open to LLMs.
Mm-hmm.
But that particular program, because what happens is that American University has two epigram programs, the International Legal Studies, which is the program that is more populated, if you want to call it somehow, because it has probably, I believe, between the LLM candidates, the SJD, and we're going to define what we're talking about in a second, SJD candidates, the certificate students, the Humphrey Fellows, I think there's a total probably 100 and give or take 190. And then the law school has another program, the law and government. And because of the nature of the title that you're going to receive, it's inevitable that you have to enroll in some very domestic courses. So when, and actually the LLMs here have the option of having a dual degree, meaning that they finish 24 credits, which
mm-hmm.
is what Liliana is doing right now, and if she wants, she can enroll in the other. It's almost a given that she's going to get accepted into either one of the programs. Now she's ISSB, International Legal Studies Program, of course she's going to be applying for law and government if she finishes more credit, then she gets the
certificate.
Yeah, it's actually a very expensive endeavor because we're talking about credit hours. But certainly if you want to sit for a bar, let's say, and you want to be sort of up to the level that you are going to be when you graduate from your first year of law school, it's a great idea. If you can afford your in time and, you know, monetarily speaking, if you can afford that. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, so my name is Viviana Maya. I'm an Ecuadorian lawyer. And I graduated in 2002. And before I graduated, I was working in Guayaquil in NGOs and also for the Chamber of Industry. And as soon as I graduated, I applied to do an internship at an organization called the Candidate. And I was waiting. I said, let's see how it's going to go, and I was accepted, so I came to the U.S. Before that, even before I got to the OIS, I knew that I wanted to, had a master of an LLM in International Legal Studies. Why I figured that out? Because when I was in 2000, I was not even done with my law degree in Ecuador. I participated in the Jesuit competition. I don't know if you have heard of it. It's an international law court competition.
They
have
it here.
Yeah. It's here in Washington, D.C. The American University, they have a MOOC competition that is about human rights. But this one that I'm talking to you is about public international law. So I organized the first Ecuadorian team to participate in that competition, and it was very hard. We raised the money, we went to talk with the embassy in Quito,
wow.
The U.S. to get the ticket, and then the professor, we didn't have book in English. It was like a hard work. So I like it very much. And when I came here in D.C. to D.C. in 2000, I was like, oh, great, we went to the OIS, to the World Bank. I said, this is what I want to go. I want to do. So I picked up the application for the OIS. It's a short thing. And when I was at the OIS, I knew I wanted to apply for a Master of Laws, but the period has already passed. I'm making a long story. So what I did is apply for law firms here in Washington, D.C. And I got interviews. Incredible. I took the Washington Post and I applied to many places. Of course, I'm not a lawyer here, so I applied saying, like, oh, I can be a law clerk, can you law firm a legal assistant? I am a lingua, blah, 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 blah. And I got focused. One day, and it was a civil rights employment offer. And they hired me, they sponsored me for my H-1B and professional visa, and I worked for them for 2 years. Actually, I wanted to keep on working for them and studying the Master of Laws, but then the time didn't work. And then, yeah, I applied for two jobs and I applied to American University. And I decided to come here to OEU because of the unique human rights program. It's very specific and the professors are great. And also because I was interested in the gender and the law program that they have. So I decided to come here, and that was 2004. to tell is like as a JD, why would be interesting for you to do a master's course is because of the international background. If you want to work, for example, in a law firm that does like trade agreements with other countries, you may want to have this background in non-government international media studies, because you will be able to study the international agreements like NAFTA, like CAFTA. That's regarding business. And if you're interested more in the human rights arena and you want to work for the American Court of Human Rights and the American Commission for Global Rights and Human Rights Watch, like this, and then, I mean, this is like, because as a JD, even though you can take classes that we take in international and everything, I think you're more of a pretending to take the classes that you need to pass your bar.
But those are basically the ones that she has to take no matter what, because she doesn't even have the prerogative of choosing the courses that she's taking. And those are the courses that are going to be tested in the bar, give or take.
Some cases, sometimes they take some international law class, but it's never going to be that specific, and you're never going to learn that.
Yeah, it's just that my pen died. I think I
just fell.
Oh,
it's not this morning. No, actually. No, but it's not. It's just a couple
of ideas.
Let me say over here. Why? Yeah. For example, if you are interested in comparative law, you figure, an integral, you know, I had two classes with JDs, and my class, like, they were so, like, incorrect when we were editing the students there because of the different approach and interpretation of the law. We have two different people. Latin America is civil law. Everyone is from Cuba, from Brazil. It's a civil law system. It's like everything is written on the code. Rather, here in the U.S., you have things to read the case, the jurisprudence. I don't know if you knew that.
I know there was a difference, but I don't know exactly.
Yeah, that's the difference. Latin American countries are what is called civil law, which means that our legal system is the written system. Everything is written in code. So when you are handling a case, litigating a case, all our arguments as a lawyer for Latin America first is the law. What the law said, the way you said, and at the end you put jurisprudence. That's not the first source of the law for us. The first source is the law, the constitution, the code, and then jurisprudence over there, and then international jurisprudence. So lawyers in Latin America are starting to put in the domestic law the jurisprudence. And the American Court of Human Rights has said that you cannot withhold the payment of the judges or whatever, put it over there. And it's very interesting in the class when you are with the thinking that you get and the way you analyze the cases. So it's different. So if you want to do comparative law, and if you want to work, for example, for the government, you are a U.S. citizen and you want to work for the government in the civil office when they deal with like race discrimination issues or with, I don't know, refugees, the federal inspection of refugees, you may want to have the knowledge of international law. And international treaties like a normal immigration class would be great, then you will need to know also the conventions and other things. So that would be good to have that, and also as a JD, you want to work in legal reform projects. You want to work for the U.S. government agency to help developing countries. You want to work in legal and judicial reform projects. So doing an LLM international studies, you will understand the United States wants to invest in a project in Peru to change the legal and judicial system. Then you need to know all the civil law, how the courts have different structures, you know, a federal government is just one, you know, a republic, and that would help you a lot. It's not like,
I think that was about
the main reason.
Well, let me just introduce myself. I'm sorry I just started talking without doing that, because I guess that would have been nice, huh? My name is Sandra Bruto, and up until October
31st,
2005, I am the Assistant Director of International Career Programs in the Office of Career Services here at the Law School. Yeah.
I don't know if it was in the
It's not that, it's my title is so long. It's one of the things, it's one of the probably you should ask your mom and dad if they disagree with what I'm going to tell you, but I bet they're not. One of the things that is interesting in this country is that people get to have very, very long titles.
The delegation just got let out, so there might be more people coming for the... this is for the LLM talk?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Sandra Russo.
Nice to meet you.
My name is Pinoza.
Hi, I'm Viviana.
¿Cómo te llamas?
Berenice.
What school?
Both.
In
UC Berkeley.
Oh, wow. So this is cold for you.
No, actually, it was raining like this at home.
Yeah.
UCLA people, this is cold for them.
Oh, yeah.
Berkeley is more north.
Yeah, we're by San Francisco. So how's the weather right now?
I was in LA before coming here, so I don't know.
We have the week off for flyback week. The both students have a week off in the fall.
You do?
Yeah.
For it's made so that students won't lose so much school going back for clerkship interviews or for...
Are you serious?
Also for on-campus interviews.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well,
except for UCLA, the other UC.
Yeah. But it's only in California, or are you?
I thought it happened at other schools that I'm finding out.
But what does one else do then?
Oh, everyone be cut off for the exact same reason. I think it's right to just do it for 2 and 3 else.
Yeah, because one else don't do anything during this week then.
They stretch in their outlines and they come to the NOSA. Every year it falls during our playback.
Are you one of them?
I'm a 3L.
A 3L. So you have a job? What did you do during this month?
I worked at a lottery.
Where? In Okay.
Doing what kind of thing? It's named Baker and Hosteller. I was unassigned, but I'm interested in employment work. And so we do employment, general litigation, business development, specifically shareholders, and music department.
Do you have an LLM program in your school?
We do, and one of my biggest concerns is that tenemos nuestro grupo de la raza y siempre tratamos de invitar a los LLM, pero como que they don't identify with us, and all the LLM students hang out together. And even though like I know Eduardo and Sergio and other students who are part of the LLM, as much as we want to outreach to them, like, oh, no, it's okay, we have something else to do at lunch. Or we meet at lunch. Both set up in such a way that we all have the same lunch hour.
Yeah.
So we hold our meetings at lunch.
So you don't have classes during lunch?
No, from 12:45 to 1:45 or something.
There was a time in this law school that you guys didn't have classes at 12:00 either. That is not the case right now.
I don't
change my schedule.
I don't know how to either
classes. No. Professors
should
start at 12, which is incredible.
Yeah.
But
it's just a lot easier. I mean, I guess that's why our school is so big on organizing.
Yeah.
The fact we have the time that we can meet with each other.
And you always have an enough great attendance, which I think in other schools...
It helps that we also serve food.
No, I think pizza belongs next to the word law school. Law school that serves pizza, because my son...
And alcohol.
No,
the lawyers are
really
not here.
Oh,
gosh.
During your lunch
meetings,
do you have alcohol?
Between 3 o'clock, they have kicked them a lot and a lot of
No, Tulane wasn't like that. It was a cultural shock for somebody who comes from Panama. I'm a Panamanian lawyer who comes from Panama. That you know. And to see that the Tulane is amazing because I think that the drinking age is 18, I believe, yes. And so the undergrads have a bar inside the campus.
Oh, we're the only UC that has a bar on campus.
And there's another bar that...
The drinking age is 21 there, though.
Yeah, but you have you have undergrads?
Yeah.
So they have to wear their wristband, I guess.
Yes.
You know, not here, that doesn't happen. You know, the undergrads are always...
which makes sense, you know, if you think about it, not to the day, you know, we have to continue talking about this, bridging the gaps between the algorithms and the babies, but it makes sense once you think about it from the standpoint of a parent, because if your kid is drinking, you would want that kid to drink and just walk home and not drive or anything like that, not that you want to drink, but that's the reality.
Well, it's funny because I went to undergrad at Berkeley also. Undergrads knew that you guys have kegs once a month in the quad. Do you know how many undergrads are here? But
thank God the word hasn't gone around.
Yeah. And also, it did get around last year, and the UC police, we have to get permits in order to have it. Charlie's really cracking down on the enforcement of the permit.
And the age and asking you.
Well, part of the permit is you're supposed to have a faculty member that's supervising.
Wow, I don't want that job at all. Anyway, I was about to start introducing myself. I started. This is Viviana Maya. It's one of the LLM students here at the law school. I also work at the law school and work in the Office of Career Services. And my main job here is to counsel the foreign lawyers getting their master's degree. The reason why I was asking if you have a program of LLMs, do you happen to know how many students you have in that program?
I guess I can only tell you in terms of the pages in the Facebook. They have about 2.5 pages.
So you have smaller.
Well, each page is
like
about
this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there's maybe 50. No, I would say at least 80.
80. Well, so that's a good one. We have two LLM programs here, International Legal Studies, and Viviana is one of our proud and very good students. And we have the Law and Government, which is more designed and devised with the idea in mind that people who want to work in the government in this country would come. But the interesting part is when they started that program, I think 6 years ago, they never thought that they were going to have, having 10 students in a program that only has 60, and those 10 students being foreign trained attorneys, is actually a large number. And it's growing by this semester, because American University is one of the few universities in the United States that has two admissions during the academic year for LLMs. Yes. In January, we expect a group of probably 40 to 50 students. And in September, August, September, probably 90 to 100 students. Plus the law and government. You know, whoever graduates in December gets sort of replenished the number in terms of the people that actually start in January. The law and government program has 60 students as of now.
We also have a GSP program, and a lot of international students are in the GSP.
We call it SJD here. A couple of things because I'm going to work here as a career counselor too. One of the biggest mistakes that I see, because many of the JDs that come to my office come with the idea that they want to work in international practice and or abroad. So I get to review lots of not only LLM resumes, but JD resumes. Juris Doctor is your degree. You have to see how many people with, with Juris Doctorate. That is actually not correct. It's a Juris Doctor, so that's what JD stands for. LLM, it's actually a Latin phrase. It means legum magister or legum magistra, which is master of law. And it has a period after the second L and a period after the M. And SJD or JSP is Doctor in Science of Jurisprudence. And yours is the same, just that the letters are different. They belong here to the IUSB, the group, and we have probably 20 right now. These people have to have 1 year of residency, and I think it's a requirement that probably all the law schools have, like a year of residency, and then the 2 years they actually have to write a thesis. And not any thesis, it has to be accepted by a professor who's going to review it, and it has to really contribute to the legal field.
It has to be original.
It's actually a difficult program to get in, because you really have to have a legal research background, you really have to write very well in English. And let's face it, when you deal with foreign attorneys, and we have foreign attorneys from 65 countries, or 70 countries if you count the people from the law government, you're bound to have a couple of LLMs that actually their writing skills are not up to par with what you would bring to the table, that's the And you know what? Good that you say that because it's amazing. And it's amazing too because there's another group that I also counsel here that you probably, because in California, probably the number is actually larger, the foreign JDs. These are foreign nationals who have student visas who come to the United States and who come to law school to get trained as lawyers, to think as a lawyer in the United States. Many of them actually are bound to have, you know, to have the degree here and, you know, practice, you know, in other countries. And that is a very interesting group because they are the same in many levels as the foreign trained attorney. American University has a group called Multicultural International Student Organization that started, it started with the name International JE Student Organization. It changed because they included more people with U.S. Citizenships and in undergrad backgrounds that actually went abroad or felt that, you know, like you, that you were mentioning that in your family you were raised by a Brazilian and a Cuban, you know, you feel that you're multicultural and sometimes you feel as if, you know, you don't belong here or you don't belong. So they created this new, you know, they changed the name of the organization and it's incredible. Every year there's about 5% students in that group. So, you know, there's a misconception because a person has an accent. And all of us that have accents are very self-conscious. You know, when I'm talking and I'm listening to myself speaking in English, I always am curious because I'm always looking at the faces and the eyes of people. You know,
I think it's true of those of us who are bilingual and speak in Spanish and like, oh, do I really sound that cultural?
It's inevitable. I mean, I think we all have to go through a process of understanding that we're going to have an accent. There's no way. I mean, my dad, I'm a Panamanian attorney. My dad married my mom in Belgium. I was born there, and then they went to Panama. But my dad is from Haiti, so he speaks French. And he always, until the day that he died, he speaks better Spanish than French now, I think, speaking ability. But he always is going to have an accent. You know, it's inevitable. That's part of who you are. I think to be honest with you, to sort of give you a straightforward answer to your inquiry and your question, and probably you, when you belong to a student organization, you're the president next year, or you know, the secretary treasurer of this organization or a member, and you're organizing an event, you're going to have the same question. I think you have to have expectations that are close to what's going to happen. If you get 1 to 5 students, those 1 to 5 students are going to be your best representation to the rest of the AE students. I think having, and take it from me that I came here 6.5 years ago thinking that to all my programs I have to have all the LLM students, you know, and then very fast I dropped from that, you know, that mountain because if I get 20 students, those are the 20 students that are going to tell the other 100 or 130.
Well, that's because you can't even get one. We always have a good number of people, Brazilian students. We have at least, like, we have 4 this year. And in terms of Latino students, there's a woman who's been there 5 3 years. And we have at least 2 that I know of. I have to go through the Facebook again and see.
Mm-hmm.
But,
you know, do it the other way around. Instead of you inviting them, tell them to invite you and go to their event. You know, LLMs, since the moment that I went to Tulane to get my master's degree, and I was talking to Viviana before when we were preparing, LLMs have sort of like the label in the party borders and the much fun of the law schools. At least in my days at Tulane, that's what I've been hearing, and that's what I keep hearing from JDs. You know, I think they have a sort of an advantage over JDs because some of us went to get LLMs and were very focused on grades. Really, for an attorney, I would say that's a waste. If I can go back in time, I would say that's a waste of time. I mean, nobody has asked me ever for my grades in my LLM program. I would have enjoyed more having the opportunity to go to events, having the opportunity to go to, you know, the bars and do the bar review. Yesterday, a student told me that she's going to, without the JDs, to the bar review.
take it from the cultural aspect first, and then go into the academic aspect to see how it goes, you know? And sort of, are you a member of any student organization that wants to attract?
Yes, I'm both in the Berkeley Law as a Law Journal, I'm the Berkeley Law as a Law Student Association, and also the Coalition for Diversity. That's the organization that we have at the university at Lowell.
The other thing that I can tell you that took me a little while, because once you're in the mode of the U.S. system of training, you sometimes forget that la raza doesn't mean anything until you explain what la raza is. Coalition of diversity, you keep hearing diversity, words like diversity, people of color, those types of terminologies are not used in other countries, so people don't understand what that is. I mean, what is people of color? I mean, are they yellow, orange, purple? I mean, what do you mean by people of color? And sometimes it's very hard for people who technically are supposed to know what that means to explain it to a person that, what do you mean people, you know? But sometimes it's better to, when you send invitations, just to have in bold or in another different color some of the explanation of what the purpose. And or, you know, have in the body of, and I don't know what you think, Viviana, you probably can get more information about this, but the purpose of this event and why, and I do it with my workshops personally, why should you go to this workshop, or why should LLMs participate in this workshop, and highlight that part, you know. Another idea that I would suggest would be a good one for the beginning of the semester, the academic year, would be to have a letter sent to all of them. You know, from you, written to them.
Yeah. Why do you want the LLS to be hanging out with you guys? Why do you want the LLS to be hanging out with you, please?
Well, I mean, para nosotros lo importante es desde que estamos escribiendo de diferentes regiones y muchos de nosotros no nacimos allá. Somos de aquí. Estamos tratando de hablar de los países donde vienen nuestros papás. Y ellos tienen ese tipo de, they have the point and perspective that we need. And they, especially like in our journal, we're lab crit based. So we really, in Latino critical theory, we don't focus on the domestic, we focus on the international impact.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, and just also, that's what, for me, it's one of those things like, I want to be able to do the work that I do here and relate it to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my mom cannot talk in the terms that we talk about at the law school. So how can I do that in the legal field? What perspective can you give me? We're very lucky that just last year we started Español para Abogados.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things, like, for me, I needed to do. Like, how do I say retainer agreement in Spanish, you know? Like, you know, those type of things. And just really understanding the fundamental differences. Like, okay, I can't take out, Professor Alquempo, who spoke here earlier today, was a visiting professor last year. And I would have loved to go to his class. He conflicted with my evidence class.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in terms of like, I need to take a bar class, or I need to, you know, it's one of those things where, sure, superficially in my political science background, I know some international perspective,
mm-hmm.
but the understanding of Napoleonic civil code law, and then our common law, and being able to talk about those things, I didn't have a chance.
That's a great, that's what you need to explain, not try to bridge all of them, but at least one or two, that's what Sandra said. You are not bridging a little group. Try to be friends at least with one or two that are like the leaders of the group. And you explain that to them. And then they irrigate the voice to the others. And like, you know, these JDs, they are really interested in all the knowledge that we can share, and also they can provide this other knowledge to us and make them understand that you can really interact between the group of you.
It's also just for networking, also. Like,
exactly.
We're
just talking about that.
We have access to outlines and things like that, or whatever.
Exactly. I have a lot of JD friends. Great. You can even go find an outline in the website of the university, because we don't know, but you know.
Well, the RASA Association. education, we have our own collection, our own library. If you need the books, come to our library, because we buy our books and then we leave them there for other students to take.
You are very well organized.
Congratulations. Thank you. And so, I mean, I would love to be, especially, I think also sometimes there's the assumption that, oh, you're an LLM student, you must have come to Dinero because of the fact that, like, you're at that level of, you know, in order to be from Latin America and be able to come to a level. And so, I don't know if that...
That's a myth.
I don't know if that plays a part. There's so many questions. Like, I would love to just wonder, is it because I'm a Chicana and therefore I can't really identify? Like, it's one of those things what comes to my identity was like, okay, I know I'm a Mexicana. And the first time I figured that out was in third grade when this little girl was like, you're Hispanic. I'm like, mommy, me llamo Hispanic King. It was one of those things. She's like, well, mija, pues, you were born here when I'm Mexicana, and so yes, you're Mexicana, but, you know.
And then a Mexican national would tell you, you are gringa.
Exactly. So when I go back home to mis abuelitos y todo, like, that's when they're like, but you grew up totally different, around different things, with access to different things. And so that sometimes I feel there's that tension too. It's like, is the reason we can't come to our events and we don't identify with that is because of the fact that we have the descendant type of mentality? I mean, I don't...
It's not that convoluted, honestly. I'm sorry, but it's not that convoluted, honestly. We, and I can include myself because I was a foreign trainer and also getting an exam, we don't have time nor the energy to understand the differences that the U.S. puts in things and labels. You know, that's why I think a simple definition of what a raza is, and that it's not only for people with Latin or Hispanic interests, that anybody can go. Look, yesterday in the career fair, there was a student, two or three students, Asian students, and the other, and we were in a group, and they went to interview in the career fair upstairs. And one of the Chilean students asked, she's from China, why are you going? This is a Latino conference. And she's like, I don't care. I just wanna talk to people that are working in law firms. And actually, you know what, for an Asian person, and that's another totally different story, but for an Asian person to say that, thank God. I mean, finally they decided it's not the title that you put into things, it's what you're gonna get from it, or what are you gonna get from going to the Raza meetings or Hispanic Law Student Association or Multicultural International Student Association. The fact that they organize luncheon practitioners with practitioners that we don't know anything about. Or La Raza has outlines, and La Raza organizes different events and panels with people that can, at the end of the day, benefit the law firm that you work at home. It's not necessarily the fact that they are Brazilians or Mexicans or Panamanians or Ecuadorians and they don't go to your meetings because they think, you know, they don't even, honestly, they don't even know. It's just a fear of raising their hand. Lately, that's not necessarily the case. It wasn't the case in my days, but now LLMs just raise their hands and start talking, and people sometimes don't understand it. But they feel, they sort of resent the fact that some JDs are so intense. And that's exactly what they have told me. I don't know, Viviana, if you have a different take on it, but intense, that they're so focused on the you know, the studies, and you know, one even told me the other day, and she's an older woman.
I would say in terms of intensity, they might be our organization mobilizes and organizes, and we're very politically intense.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of our studies, we could do a lot. I think we could learn some things from the LLM students.
But no, but this is what a student, and not the first time, but I'm talking about current stories that I've heard. Granted that this was told by an LLM who's actually older, can be, you know, any of us mom, you know, and she decided to come to law school. And she's like, you know what, I don't have anything to prove to anybody. I already have a long, you know, career, you know, I just came here, I think it's a great idea, it's, I'm struggling with the English, but I don't care, and I like her because, you know,
yeah,
and she's sitting in the class between two U.S. JDs, you know. She turns to one and the guy doesn't give her the time of day. And it's like, you try, but
oh, yeah.
If they don't want to give you the time of day, then what do you think if she was a younger person? Because you have the range of ages in people who come here. Yes, there are people that are very, very, very wealthy in their country. There are people that are not wealthy and that are here on an F1, an J1, which is a sponsor visa, or an F1, sponsored by the school that gives the tuition remission, and they're so focused, or their families are struggling to send them money to live. So you have all the range of emotions that are happening in a very diverse group of people. Not all of them get together with one another, by the way. Sometimes people from the same countries don't get along very well, and sometimes they're very, very, very well put together. But you also have to consider the fact that they are going through culture shock in a big way. I mean, it's a different language, it's a different system. You guys were talking about the civil code and how you have to think as a lawyer in civil law countries. And then you come here and everything is like, spot the issue. I remember the first time my professor said that to me, and I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Because nobody explains that to you. So at the beginning of their time here in September, they really are getting acclimated. Some of them don't have housing. I mean, the same things happen to you, probably. But you also have what your abuelitos told you, which is true. You know how to defend yourself. You know how to deal and cope with that. I, personally, when I went to my LLM program, it was the first time in my life that I had to pay a bill. Never in my life pay a bill. To this day, I don't know how to hire. Because there's somebody, you know, I'm talking about my personal situation. It's not the situation of all the LLMs, but you have so many different people. I think it's communication. You know, the key part here is communication. So that they understand that you want to be a more complete lawyer. And this is one of the points that I said, a more complete lawyer, because you understand that the world is getting globalized. You understand that the world is moving towards having a lawyer or a person who's going to help you, that you can address, you know, as a lawyer, you can address issues from different perspectives. And who's going to give you the other perspective? Because you're getting common law perspective from your professors, the other group of people that are in the school. So to make them understand. And I'm going to tell you a couple of other things, and I'm going to let Viviana talk, because I've done that too much today. But, you know, line up the Dean of Student Affairs.
She's actually Latina. She worked and studied in Cuba. So she does, in terms, like, she's very involved with us in terms of, like, the organization and the things that we represent. And so, again, it's one of those things, like, maybe we'll have a couple LL students come to our informational, and then, you know, and that's on the good informational over CIVs too, and then they will come back.
But you know what, it's because I think also in the administrative side, because I was going to say, talk to the Dean of Student Affairs, talk to the LLM advisor, that definitely you guys are going to get one here once I leave. Talk to Daniel Bradlow, talk to Jamie Raskin, the two directors of the different LLM programs, to ask them. You know, these are people that are working with foreign attorneys on a daily basis. Go to your international student services, or the whatever they call it in your school, but the people that deal with the visa issues, which are the best and the first point of contact in the context that they always have to have, because they're traveling, they need their visa to sign, etc., etc. What I think sometimes, I think what has worked for me, sometimes when I see blank faces, you know, is to put the question on the other person. Okay, three LLMs are here. Not to put you on the spot, but what do you think we should do in order to attract more people like you, that you would come, so that you put the ownership on the other side, you know? And so now let's put the ownership. I'm going to do it now.
let's put the ownership on an LLM. What would you have, you know, if I was MISO, for example, mm-hmm. here, or Ankita, the International Law Society president here at WCL, and she comes to you and says, how can I attract more of your classmates? What would you say?
What I have told her before, like, and that was my question for you. Why do you want me to be with you? Like, let's talk. It was that communication. What kind of exchange can we have? And that's what we did.
You know, another thing, that's a great point, because one thing that I had here is that we have in the school, and I bet your school, because of the links with Asia and with other regions of the world, you probably have an externship office or an office that helps you land positions, non-paid positions during the summer abroad.
I wish we had an office, because actually most of the time it's by ourselves with the students who've done it before, but we do have a student organization for international studies and usually in the human rights area.
Well, that would be the best ally for La Raza and for the other organizations like you, to do things in pairs, to invite LLMs to be mentors, okay?
And they I'm sorry, I interrupted. That's what Akita did to grant me and two other LLMs to, like, they invited us to a forum to explain what was going to be in that international moot court competition that I told you, the Philip Jesus, because it was a girl from Georgia, Tina, myself, I think the German team was. Yeah, exactly. So we participated, and here the JVs were very eager. They wanted to participate. They wanted to make it to the final rounds because it's a very prestigious competition. And they did it. The team Latinos of American University, they made it to the final round of this international competition that first you have to compete in your home countries, like in Peru, in Brazil, in Russia. And then you go to the final rounds in Washington in April. And the JVs here in the U.S., they do regional competitions. First here, like in California, then in the middle, and then over here in the east. And so AU made it to the final round, they like, whatever they did, New York, I don't know. So it was very interesting, and that's how we started the exchange. And then the next time we did a happy hour and we invited the JVs. And not so many show up, but the people that invited us for that exchange, Akita, Sean, they came to us. So that's how. I forgot this too. Mm-hmm.
Two other key individuals, mm-hmm. if you have a foreign lawyers at both, and if you don't, it would be good to offer that idea to the administration, because having the representation of the LLMs by a manageable group of four people, which you guys have here with Carlos, the guy that you met, he's the president right now, every 4 months they change different admissions, but having a group that represents them, mm-hmm. and having them, honestly, for my own workshops, and I work here, for my own workshops, I have to rely on the student group. There's no other way. People are never going to go. And I'm a foreigner, too. I mean, I have the same exact problem that you guys have, because I think students listen better to other students and what other students' experiences have been. You know, invite alums that, you know, it's a little bit of a legwork on your part to go to the alumni office or to go to the career services office to find out which LLMs foreign attorneys have stayed and are working currently in the region. And you invite them and do a program specifically for them. You know?
We have at our student government, there's an LLM rep. And then they have the LLM students, because the majority are European, so they started at European lawyers, and so they have that. But beyond that, it's a lot of informal things.
It is interesting because some schools, you know, and you guys have a very large LLM group, right? People, you know, can.
I'm guessing just by the picture size.
So if you have 50, it warrants the fact that they need a representation, at least one person to represent us. You know, because you have 50.
I'm like Christian that won't and would always have LLM students in that group, but I don't know. I think that's just because of our commonality and our faith. It's easier to ascribe to than an identity.
La Raza, and I know La Raza because La Raza exists at Tulane too.
I honestly, when you said it, I went back in time, and honestly, I would have never gone to any meetings because I didn't understand what that means. I know what the mean, what the word means in Spanish, but I didn't know what it means in terms of having a certain organization that decided to, like, you know, there's a La Raza Council here in Washington, and I still don't understand. You know, it's such a very powerful word. Yeah, so just a quick explanation, not make it more than two lines. You know, a quick explanation of what the person is going to get out of it. I think you guys had a great point. Opening a position for one of them, and that they elect somebody in their group to represent them in your student organization.
In the school, overall school student government, they have a representative.
But you can open. You know what they did here for? I think it's a human rights brief. Did you write an article for the human?
No.
But the human rights brief was actually clever. It's the first time in a publication I've done that in 6 years that I've been here. They opened one slot for an editor because they couldn't get anybody to write from that perspective, from the exactly what he just said, from the international perspective. They got together, I think, with the good guidance of the academic advisors or the professors, and they opened slots. And I remember the first year, the student was very, very dedicated. You also have to make sure that they're not the person understand what they're going to get into, because then you can get the negative marketing, which is not what you want, because you didn't give me the whole information beforehand. You know, as long as you're very upfront, I think it's just a matter of communication. You guys have an academic advisor. If they have an academic advisor, that's another person that you guys can contact. I wanted to tell you, because Viviana was talking, particularly for WCL, that Viviana was talking about the different courses. You have an academic advisor in the school. Her name is Lavanya Saben. She's in the Means of Student Affairs Office.
For what else?
For all the JCs.
And how should we have access?
Look, she didn't know that she has an academic advisor and she has it.
Take advantage of it. Take advantage.
Yeah, I did that for my LLM. I went to talk to her and said, hey, I'm the professor Bradlow.
It's more in your face for the LLMs. The JCs don't know that this person is.
You know, not so many LLMs thought that. And then they are just with a list of courses, and I'm like, I remember a lot of them, and I was like, come and talk with Heather, what are you doing? They were trying to figure out, what's the last day of registration? And I was like, oh, I don't know, Wednesday or something.
And take advantage of the classes that you're taking together. I mean, just approach them. You're gonna see you're gonna see the reaction. You know, it's gonna take them back a second, and they're gonna be so excited that somebody from the other side decided to speak with me, you know.
Speaking of advice, the other thing that I get from my JD friends and his great friend Ellen is to talk about professors. Because sometimes I can say the title of a class and it seems great, but why one professor is not that good? Because sometimes the same class is offered by two professors. So it's good to talk with a JD that has already talked with all the JDs, and he's like, no, I'll just take, like, you know, at Nick is better, like Johnson or whatever.
I think those are the things we, every semester, we give each other, you know, our books, and we also talk about, like, all right, what career path do you want? Do you want a social justice path? Do you want a firm path?
Mm-hmm.
Right, these are the professors. And that's what we do within our organization, but I don't know how to get, like, but I think you're right. I think, I mean, even to people from the East Coast who don't know La Raza, you know, it's a very Southwestern.
So I was going to say that even when you came from, like, Warner, it's like, it's still La Raza, it seems like this term that I still don't really have a grasp on. And the only reason that I do have a grasp on is for this organization, National Council La Raza, that I know that they're more than just Mexican-American descent or Mexican descent, and they're more, like, all inclusive, like, Latin American. But if it wasn't for that, like, I really wouldn't have an understanding of it. It is a very much, like, Southwest-Western term.
And you are from?
Miami.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
One other thing that we tried, oh my God, we tried, and we were not successful, is the language table.
I was going to ask you about that, actually.
For a person that speaks different languages, because, I mean, you speak Spanish very well, but probably you have another language that you're, you know, getting up to speed with, or you
want to...
But, you know, having that opportunity to sit down, And you know what happens? It works like the two first times, and then after that, everybody gets busy. It's actually easier in your school than it is here. Because since you guys have lunch hours free,
yeah,
I mean, it's great. You can actually have it. And for you guys here, it's going to be quite a difficult thing, but on the other hand, to do it more attractive. I remember, and I laughed because I couldn't believe how many people went 4 years ago. Student from Venezuela, very beautiful and tall, which is very important for what she wanted to do. She decided she wanted to teach salsa to anybody. It was incredible. There were staff members, no professors of course, staff members, JDs, LLMs, friends of other people that came to the law school. And she had them. No, and it was funny because people would go in the international dance, not vice versa. So people would go in and stand, and she's very good people's person. So she would like grab the person. Of course, not many men were there. Men that dance very well are great assets too, because they attract a lot of people. The Hispanic Law Student Association actually does something upstairs. No, here we're on the sixth floor. No? In the cafeteria, and what attracts other students is the fact that there's a guy that actually dances very well. You know, use the assets that the Latin American community has. I mean, everybody is passionate about dancing, even when they tell you that they're not. You know, even men that tell you that they're not, that they are.
We just started the Latino Graduate Association on campus, so it's interdisciplinary, and I realized from other grad students, although many of them, because they don't have cohorts, they've isolated,
mm-hmm.
but the international students that are there, it seems like they're more willing to be part of our organization as Latino Graduate Association, and they don't have, I don't know why that is. Like,
it's a definition, period.
Okay.
You guys are not doing anything wrong.
Okay.
It's a definition, and telling them, if you give me your email address, I'm going to send you a flyer that the American Bar Association, they're coming here November 9th. They put together pathways to employment in international law.
Yeah.
What I love about that flyer is that it has bullet points of why people have to go to that particular. That can be something that you can do. You can do a flyer with bullet points.
So they're coming here?
They're coming. Yeah. They're coming. And they have a person who's an LLM, by the way, in the panelists, which is actually great. It's November 9th.
No, who's the person that is here?
I don't know. He didn't. He told me, but I didn't. Okay. So I'm going to send you the flyer right now. I'm going to go to my office. I'm going to send it to you. Bullet points. Are you interested in outlines or, you know, or for the sake of this example, learning how to dance or having a understanding American culture. This is the last thing because we run out of time and I don't want you guys to be late. But what LLM also 4 years ago, what he did, he posted a little sign in one of the student areas and he says, he's Brazilian, come learn about the Brazilian culture and if you want to exchange so that I can learn a little bit about the American culture, I would be very happy.
Yeah.
My email address. That, and he would meet this Chinese student who was passionate about Portuguese in Brazil. And they would exchange.
Is he with you?
No. All these ideas are coming also from older people that already have practice. You know, the younger people are more inclined to... He wasn't like a party goer. He wasn't going to the bars and things like that. So he was really, you know, he was married. And so he had other interests.
But what it was interesting about my group too is that we have like different people that they were a little bit older, they didn't go to bars or anything. But I remember finding the time and just hanging out with them in coffee places.
Exactly.
Like I hung out with all the older, they were my friends. And you know, yeah, you know who I'm talking about, like everything. And it's great. And also that person was like good friends of a lot of JPs.
Right.
Yeah,
but this one is the guy from Juno, Norway. He's a guy from Brazil, and he has been the only one who has done it.
Is there something that I was going to ask about the table, so I know there's other students who aren't necessarily Brazilian but have studied in Brazil and want to practice their Portuguese, and we've been talking about like
definitely an interest to speak Portuguese, and I barely get to speak Portuguese here, because when I do call my mom, okay, that's about the only time. I used to speak Capoeira, and we spoke Portuguese here, I don't have the time to do that. But
yeah,
if that would work,
yeah, you can say hello every time. To Elisa, Belen, like Carlos said to you, and just say who will be interested in practicing. And I'm sure first people is going to pop up.
We have probably 4 recipients, so you have to have 8 recipients and at least one.
That's one of the things, because I studied in Brazil as well, and so, but one of the things is and then there's a lot of us who have affinity with the Brazilian culture, there's people who rap, or we do go to samba, boboji, and foco, and so, but even in those realms, it's I don't know how to, I don't want to seem like a Brazilian groupie, so it's one of those things, I don't like approaching it, oh yeah, of course, that's one of the things that I don't know how to approach, especially in the Brazil, I feel a little bit more comfortable with the Spanish-speaking students, because my Portuguese is really bad. And so, but going up to someone and just oh, you're an LLS student, I saw you on the Facebook, I don't want to, that seems like an awkward way to approach someone, so what are some of the ways that you would like to be approached?
Yeah, for example, what I love, I have a good JD classmate, they are just so where are you from again? Like if you know but you forgot, she said, you're from South America, right? And then I would say, I'm from Ecuador, and then, when did you get back? How did you get to university? That's what I know. I remember a lot of ladies, how do you AU? Or what classes are you taking? And then she's I took that class. I can give you the outline or the notes. And that's how we exchange. It's it's always everything, what country are you from? Because then you get it means whatever, Ecuador means Ghana, whatever you're from.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the Brazilian that you were telling me. One of my best friends is from Brazil, but he's studying Miami, actually, University of Miami. And we don't have that problem. I have never been in Brazil. I don't speak Portuguese or anything, and we're such a good friend. And he switched to me in Spanish and English and everything. Then it's just I think it's just, you gotta be sincere that you really want. I think that's in the person. Know whether the person is from Russia or from,
I just think that you have to be yourself. Same thing when you tell people to network, yesterday students came and said, what am I supposed to do with the tabletop? I don't understand this concept. And it's just talking. So I have to, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. at the end of the day, another avenue that you can use is to go to the student affairs office and ask if they have a listserv. And if you don't want to just chit-chat and you just want to send an email, a firm email saying, I'm open to have a relationship, to exchange views and cultural points in the American culture with people from such and such country.
Just
to
correct, I met Vanessa yesterday, and we spoke for a while. She was, we just caught it and smiled, and then she came and just started talking to me. It was really nice. But I was talking for a while, and at one point it was just I know that maybe some LLM students feel that about English, but I'm just I am totally constantly thinking about my Spanish and how to speak it. So it comes to a point where I'm just I want to stop because I feel I'm just getting myself into.
That's what my husband says all the time. When we all speak in Spanish, my family or my friends, it's I'm tuning out. Goodbye. Leave it in there.
And it's not so much, I know this because, when I'm speaking with my family, I'm not as nervous, and so it just flows. But then I get nervous, and the fact that I know, now I speak much more English than in Spanish or Portuguese, so it comes more naturally to me now. And then when I speak in Spanish, then because I'm nervous, as I'm nervous sometimes when I speak in whatever language, I'll just mess up, and then it makes me even more nervous, and I can't. So they're judging,
¿Qué es mi familia? ¿Cómo estamos ustedes? And so but what about with that, even if you're just approaching someone you don't know, do I approach an adult? Do I approach an adult?
Pero eso es una cuestión cultural. Ustedes, porque en muchos países eso es parte de la cultura. Nosotros en Panamá no usamos usted, no usamos tú. You only use usted en Panamá por las personas que son mucho mayores que tú. Entonces...
Sí, hasta en México es conocido, usted, y también,
family members, but my mom, like, my tío was a sister of my abuela, but my mom doesn't, and we don't either. So, it, I didn't even realize it was said until I was in junior high, and I took a Spanish class. It's only that.
Great.
So you guys did that?
Yeah, in Ecuador, and especially in my province, because it's like, I don't know,
more respect or whatever.
Yeah, it's like a norm. Yeah, it's respectful, so I treat my mom and my dad the
same. And Colombia is the same way.
Colombia is the same
it's
way.
I'm asking people.
Professors to my boss. And it's funny because my boss in Ecuador, I treat her as a pet and I said doctora to her, like doctor. Mm-hmm. I doctora, oh, good morning, ¿cómo está usted? Okay. And then when now that, then I graduated and now I'm here and like we're both professionals or something, I still have it like a steady in my head. And she's like, Viviane, stop that.
True,
yeah.
I mean, except for, that's why I'm saying my mom's an anomaly, like the rest of our family
does. Yeah, I know. And there's some, like for example, like when my husband, when he met my family, like remember that, you have to treat them as an ángel, yeah, you're right.
Porque, you know, cuando conozco al licenciado, and that's how I was taught, like if it's licenciado, licenciado, profesora, profesor.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, I don't want to create some type of, especially like, I mean, technically, all of the alum students are licenciados already.
Yeah.
And so, but I don't want to create that barrier.
And it creates a barrier.
So.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Not at the level that you are, and it doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah, because I would have.
I don't think anybody who travels to the United States expects people to behave the same way that
exactly.
You behave in your own country.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of liveliness. I mean, do you like the person? Do you is the person respectful even if they treat you with a two before, you know, the phrase doesn't necessarily. Look, you guys, when you speak the second language in your life or the third language in your case, you make mistakes. Imagine them. Imagine, I mean, they're never gonna make fun of you.
No.
I mean, honestly, they're never gonna make fun of you.
Like one of the guys from España sí me dijo that, like, he's like, oh, it's because
it's españoles, sobre todo.
Like, he's, as you can even in this conversation, I do a lot of Spanglish. But that's just like being a Californian, that's what we do. That's, we go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to actually, you know, have to, when I'm around people who don't speak Spanish, I'm like, okay, well, take out that. And so he's like, oh, that's really cute that you go back and forth. And I was like,
oh, but I don't know. They're in their own, like,
oh, yeah,
like category.
Yeah.
I've got a Madagascar leading to Spain.
Okay. Sorry. Well, oh, it's okay. No, this is a lot of fun, but I have to go.
No, we should go to the next panel, too. But thank you for your information, and thank you for all the ideas. I wish more people came.
Yeah.
Well, it's better sometimes to have a smaller group.
Oh,
it's
so nice.
I mean, it's
like
chocolate.
I'm going to make a conversation.
One thing that I wanted to mention is that
I didn't know, but I have to speak in two panels next week for international externships for 1L.
Oh.
I think they start. Yeah.
I haven't been paying attention to
so some of the materials that you're interested in if you want to engage in the practice.
Yes.
And the practice of international law are going to be given to you during the international exchange.
Okay.
And if you're in the, I cannot talk to you, unfortunately.
Oh, you're not good.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. Let me not ask you. That would ask me. I mean,
the professor's almost there.
Yeah.
somebody
here to be
asking
her.
You can really do like I know you're
very
good.
So I'm
going
to take you later.
I don't have any classes from being up and down elevators and things.
Send me an email because you have my card.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Good luck. Bet it.
No te quieres llevar en la cama, ya terminaste.
Sí.
Okay. Hasta luego.
Si no nos vemos. Mucha suerte.
Gracias. Le saludos a Teresa.
Ya.
Y nos seguiremos viendo de todas maneras. Y ahora me van a invitar a la fiesta de graduación, así que.
Felicidades.
Hasta luego.
Gracias.
Nos vemos en noche. Ok. Por otra persona que este verano ha sido el programa en Chile.
Uh-huh. Y no sabía si es mejor estar aquí. Cuando vuelva de Chile, no sé si es mejor trabajar aquí, como voy a estar fuera, o trabajar fuera. Entonces,
mira, la verdad es que no tiene una ventaja. Claro. Sinceramente, no se puede decir delante de otras personas que no están en Chile. La verdad es que tú ahora mismo te sientes súper aliviada porque tienes muchas clases. You have the reality of the matter is that you have classes in Buenos Aires. The next year you study in Texas. The benefit of going to Chile is that you're going to practice your language skills. The downside is that it's winter.
Yeah, I didn't realize that you could be busy.
Hi. Do you, are you Lucero?
No.
No. Have you seen Fabiola?
I saw her like an hour and a half ago.
Oh, okay. Recently.
It's something. Might be at this next panel.
The 601.
602-603. The
big room.
The one about what have we learned.
Uh-huh.
I would assume that they're going to be at that.
I know, right? Totally. Okay.
So he must be going that way, I think.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
But at the same time, it's only a month. You can always try to find a job when you come back.
The primer semestre, el primer verano realmente puedes hacer lo que tú quieras. Pero ya el segundo y el tercero sí hay que necesidad de trabajar, ¿verdad? Igual you can still do is actually consider working during the semester. If you're not going to take internships, you don't necessarily have to pay. The idea of the internship is that you're paying the school. I have to keep, you know, you have to pay the school.
No, they better want to speak. Okay, in extra, extra for credit instead of going to the class, you're going to an internship. So you get the credit instead of getting, you have to go to a seminar. The pay, yes. Oh, okay. <laughs> Then that makes sense. Okay, so it has to be in a not-for-profit, even in public, possibly, even if it works in a public interest locker or in a private locker that you would only be doing for formal work. You have to be supervised by an attorney, and you have to do a seminar. And the seminar will require you, what you can do also, and unfortunately you cannot apply, because I was going to say you can do an externship in Chile, but how many credits do you have to take in Chile? Seven? Six or seven?
I think you cannot do an externship. Mm-hmm. But I know there's some people who stayed the rest of the summer and worked there.
So what if I like from Macarena?
Or
A student, yes. Ah, but that's a student. A student, yes. Oh, Macarena is la directora del programa. Ah, that's right. Also a great program. And she's the director of the dual degree program and the director of the Chile program. Ella, Chile, no, many have logrado. Y ahora la conexión ahí. Toda la conexión ahí. Does it matter, I guess I'm just thinking, but it's more important if I get that experience in Chile versus being here, for like the class, thinking ahead, like for the next summer, saying, well, look, this is the experience that I have.
And I'm thinking para el segundo año hacer o clinic or Marshall Brennan, and I still have to decide which one. I'm traveling for the clinic now, and it's been an incredible experience. So I definitely want to do it. I don't know if I'll get in. So I'm planning to get experience during the year. Well, I guess Marshall Brennan is a legal experience. We're getting some legal experience during the year. Does it matter if I'm here versus abroad para coger esta experiencia como es diferente en Chile?
No, because you can always do the argument that you were trying to have a complete summer in a sense that you went to get credits and you went for school for a month and a half or however long that program is, and you didn't want to stay, you know, cross your arms and don't do anything type of thing. You wanted to actually take advantage fully of the experience. If you were going, let's say you decide to stay over there and you find an internship over there, you can always make the argument during that interview that you wanted to have the experience, an overall experience of the country and the legal system.
Which is the same legal system you saw out of Latin America?
Sorry, interesting. Because they all come from the Código Napoleónico, French. And then we all sort of mimic each other. You know, it comes from Argentina, Mexico, Chile. They are the pioneers, and then the other countries actually. But all of us use civil law. So definitely you can make the argument, and if you decide to do the other route, which is do the Chile program, come back here, and have a job, or volunteer or something, you can always make the argument that you wanted your summer to count for your experience because you understand how important the experience is. But definitely, nothing is going to be more important than your grades. Not to put more pressure on a very stressful environment because this is a very stressful.
But it's good to keep that in perspective. Sometimes, even though I've read it, I need to keep hearing it so that I can keep focused. Okay, I need to really focus on my grades and make sure that I'm getting, there's all these activities going on, but make sure I'm getting like the basic, lo básico.
Mira, tres cosas que si yo fuera tú, tendría que tomar en consideración. Primero, las notas son la cosa más importante. No hay nada, the grades are the most important thing. There's nothing more important than that. So getting your resume reviewed, having a relationship with the Office of Career Services as a second step is something that you do slowly and sure. But do it. Don't wait until the last minute. The problem is that people have high expectations for something that belongs to you. Having a job or looking for a job is the job that each person should have as a duty. Not other people are going to find it for you, and that's a misconception. And the third thing is that use to your advantage everything that you can use. Take it from somebody who's from another country and that gets labeled. I mean, my dad is Haitian, so I can be considered Haitian even though I've never lived there. I was raised in Panama, I was born in Europe, never lived in Europe in my life. I'm a native Spanish speaker. My grandfather was Chinese, my other grandfather was Lebanese, so everybody sees me in a different way. At the beginning, when I first landed when I first went to the LLM and people called me Chinese, I'm like, okay, you're not offending me, my grandfather is, part Chinese, fine. But then, when you start learning that people always label other individuals, I would say, take advantage of the labels at the end of the day. Who cares, in reality? I'm sorry, I hope that I'm not offending you.
No,
everybody's so sensitive sometimes. Oh, don't call me this way, or don't call me that way. I mean, call me a U.S. citizen. That's what everybody should be saying, instead of labeling everybody. That's my personal opinion. But MISO is the best example, The example that I gave you during our conversation here is what I really feel that students should be doing. Aligning themselves with student organizations. And if the student organization is not really doing what you want them to do, which is connecting with other people outside the school, then you take the initiative and you connect that student organization. Two birds with one stone. You are getting the contact that you want, and you're doing something good for the rest of the community around you. Use it to your advantage. You're not doing anything wrong. In reality, you're doing something very positive for the school. Doesn't matter. Go to all the ones that you want. Go to all the student organizations. Go to all the higher ranking officials of those student organizations, which are the Hispanic Bar Association, the American Bar Association, and the different. And start networking. Even though she has a great school that has 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock, for lunchtime, she's not in Washington, you are. Sí, si tú estuvieras en Miami podrías hacer muchas cosas, pero tampoco puedes hacer todas las cosas que puedes hacer aquí. Necesitas un carro para moverte de un lado a 50 millas por ejemplo, para el otro lado. Aquí no, acá tú tomas tu bus y te vas. Otra cosa que te dije tres, te voy a decir cuatro. Consíguete una amiga o un amigo. That it has the same kinds of ideas that you have, that really wants to network, that really would like that to be part of their experience as a law student.
También ahora o más
al final ahorita dedícate a lo que estás, ¿no? Tienes que ir a Career Day for One Else
y al lado de una calificación
y después experience your exams without any distraction. Starting January you have to have sort of another outlook in terms of Washington D.C. This is not your city, so make it your city. Start hanging out with the LLMs if you want to get international experience and the language skills. Hang out with people. The American Bar Association has lunch with every month. washing the floors of the site, have lunches every month. The two organizations have special prices with lunches for students.
How do you find out about the organizations?
En el paquete que vas a recibir en el externship, there's a list of organizations.
I'll look for them.
Yeah, unfortunately, I cannot give all those things to you. I'm not supposed to give you technically all.
Oh, that's what I would go to you to ask these questions. So cuando vas a estar aquí,
No, pero es que tienen esa idea de November 1st, so, and I agree with that idea. Students should not be, first year students should be focusing on their studies and reading, getting acclimated to law school. That is beautiful. And some people take it too serious. You know, yes, you have to take it serious, don't get me wrong, huh? But I'm not bad. O sea, goza también, o sea, la vida también es muy corta para estar metido ahí en el estudio, ¿no? Pero me agrada mucho conocerte.
Igualmente, qué específica te va hacia.
No, pero no te preocupes. Se quedan con mucha gente muy buena aquí. Aquí hay gente excepcional en esta universidad. Y te va a gustar mucho.
Un gusto, aunque no sé si vas a tener el mismo
himno
como
vas
a sacar un empleo o para comunicarte contigo.
Te pongo, te molesta si te lo escribo. No lo traje. Ah, no, te lo escribo aquí, mira, ves. Porque esto no lo voy a usar. Déjame que te lo escribo acá.
Si quieres, aquí te vengo. So you're
going to
be working at Georgetown.
I'm going to be working at Georgetown with the LLMs, actually.
Congratulations.
Gracias.
¿Cuándo
empiezas? El 3 de noviembre.
Tienes unos días de descanso, not really, just a weekend.
Like a weekend or something.
Oh,
like one day or two, I think. Yo me llevo el otro agua. I'm stealing water.
Well, you have a great weekend.
You too.
Ciao.